Did you watch The Little Mermaid Live?
Yeah.
Did you watch
it? I did. And I felt like no one watched that because it was not on Facebook. Like, nobody said anything about it.
Because it was probably not good.
And I was like...
Because none of the live versions have been...
Yeah.
I thought they did.
Who played Ariel?
The TV live version.
I don't know her name.
Okay.
Queen Latifah played Ursula.
That's good casting, I think.
And Shaggy played Sebastian. It was the best Sebastian.
Bombastic.
Yes. It was the best. I was like, I am here for Shaggy. I am here for it. It was awesome.
I assumed that Shaggy was the dog from Little Mermaid and that you were going to tell me who played the dog.
Or the guy from Scooby-Doo.
Right, so who is Shaggy?
He's a reggae rapper from the late 90s, probably when Katie and I were in high school is probably when he was most popular. Yeah.
There's so many.
And quickly fell off the map.
I liked him.
All right, well, welcome back.
He played a very good Sebastian. Okay.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
Currently on his phone, like a mill.
Absolutely, like a mill. Ignoring all of you, because I don't care about
nothing. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Katie. All right, welcome back. How was y'all's Thanksgiving breaks?
My Thanksgiving was the best Thanksgiving that has ever been had anywhere in the world.
I know we released a podcast after Thanksgiving, but now we're actually recording post-Thanksgiving.
Correct.
I dig it.
Yes. Welcome to Advent.
I know.
The beginning of the church calendar.
It's my favorite.
It is? Okay, it's your favorite.
I love Advent.
Yeah.
It's my second favorite.
But you're singing Christmas songs.
I am, because, you know...
It's not a real Adventist.
I'm not a real Lutheran.
A Seventh-day Adventist.
Well, we're definitely not that. That's a different thing.
All right, let's get to some news. Are you familiar with Cameo?
Like making a Cameo appearance?
No,
or
the
wearing Cameo?
Cameo.com.
Cameoflage?
No.
It's not Cameoflage.
What is this? Uh-oh.
Okay, so Cameo... educate you. Cameo is a new website where you can pay money to get a greeting from a celebrity.
Oh.
So, like, if it's, like, so your friend's birthday, you can shell out some dollars to get your favorite celebrity to wish them a happy birthday.
So you can get Shaggy to wish Katie a happy birthday.
Shaggy seems to be the kind of celebrity that is on Cameo. The celebrities on Cameo are not going to be, like, the Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, and even though those probably aren't even popular with the kids anymore.
Dude, I would take a shout out to Tom Hanks.
Oh, for sure.
Ariana Grande. Yes, you know, that would be a... She's popular, right? Taylor Swift. Those are not the celebrities on.
Just ask us who's popular? You're asking the wrong roommate.
Yeah, I know. I'm the cool one in the group.
Yeah. If they're not on Daniel Tiger or Pete the Cat, then...
or the Food
Network. Can I get a shout out from Doc McStuffins?
Probably. So these are mostly like reality stars or has-been celebrities.
Excellent.
And so you can pay them to give you a greeting message. Do you want to guess who the highest, like, you, how much you would have to pay, the most amount for which celebrity?
Are we guessing the amount or are we guessing the celebrity?
I want you to guess the celebrity. I'll give you a hint. It is a reality star, and it's
$2,500. $2,500
for a reality star?
For a shout-out.
I'm guessing it's
a Kardashian?
I'm guessing it's someone from one of the Bachelor or Bachelorettes.
Okay. Katie, you are closest.
Ah, shucks.
It is not a Kardashian per se, but
Kanye West.
But no, he's not on there. He's too famous. Yes, but associated with the Kardashians, and that would be Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh,
$2,500 by far the most. The next highest is $1,000. So,
wow.
Is Caitlyn Jenner a reality star?
She was on Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
She was on a reality show, but like. She was famous before that.
I would imagine if you were to poll people what Caitlyn Jenner is most famous for, the Olympic stuff would come in third at best.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm in the minority. I remember Olympic stuff because I love Olympics. Sport, competition, people coming together.
Well, anyway. I'm going to play you guys a cameo video here from Mark McGrath. You know who that is?
He was in a band.
A country singer, isn't he?
Sugar Ray, band, also worked for like Entertainment Tonight and things like that.
Okay.
Yes.
And Celebrity Big Brother.
He's pretty cute.
Okay, well, this is a new cameo video, and we're going to take a look at this new cameo. Okay, ready?
I love that we're showing a video on a podcast.
It's Mark McGrath from the band Sugar Ray, off the charts, but always in your hearts. And this cameo was booked by Cheyenne, and she wants you to know a few things. And this is a little difficult for me to say because it's the first one of these I've done, but she wants you to know that you mean a lot to her. You mean the world to her.
Can you see where this is going?
This is so awkward.
Staying in this long-distance relationship. Oh, oh man. Tough. I've been on the road for years. I've been with my wife a long time, and
all right, I'm going to ask us to stop this race. You know, somebody paid the former star from Sugar Ray to break up with
That's awful.
$100 to Mark McGrath to break up with Brayden from Cheyenne.
I don't know which is sadder, that our society has devolved to a place where we are comfortable hiring someone else to do our breakup, or the fact that this guy is in a place where he feels like he needs to accept this $100 to break up with someone.
$100?
$100. That's
the It's going to take McGrath a lot more than $100 for someone to get me to break up with someone for them.
I want to know, you know, what comes next, really. Does Brayden send back a cameo to Cheyenne?
I think that's the only logical
conclusion. Of, like, I can change, trust me, I can be better. Yeah.
Who would you get to send the return cameo?
Well, again, these are not real celebrities. Well, these are has-beens.
Just pick your, imagine you had your choice.
Okay, my choice. You know, based on some of the cameo people, let's see. I'm going to go with maybe David Hasselhoff. That seems like a cameo kind of person.
There you go. Sure. Yeah. I feel like if we're going to like meet up with Sugar Ray, maybe somebody from like Blink 182 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. There you go.
You know, someone to like meet the genre.
Right.
Yeah. Not the genre, but the era at least.
Sure. Yeah. I could see that. You know, maybe other, you know, reality stars you'd want to use there to come back. Trying to think of, you know,
you could get Green Day because they played that Time of Your Life song, and maybe you could get in a cameo appearance of that, and that would like bring back
fond a little
memories.
Love song.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah, I can see, you know, these. This is a new thing.
I think we should do this for Lord of Life.
Okay,
I think we should let people pay us to. Yeah. I mean, pay the church.
I'm not going to break up with anybody.
We can set standards. Look, obviously, we have a bar.
I gladly, if any of our high school students want to pay me $100 to break up with their boyfriend or girlfriend for them, fine. It's not a big deal. I'll do it.
Patrick's heartless. He has no problem crushing the hopes and dreams.
I would not be able to do that for myself very easily, but I was not able to do that when I was their age. But now, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
I have no problem breaking the heart of a 16-year-old. Yeah. I'll be like, might want to rethink that one.
All right, Jack, you know, Shelly's not interested anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, it's over. We're good.
Have a nice day.
Yeah.
This is basically like a new version of the singing telegram.
I guess so.
With a celebrity. Like,
sure.
That's, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, is there a cameo from a celebrity you would want to come talk to you? Or if you were to get bad news, who would be the celebrity you would want to deliver
there
that bad news?
Okay. I would want Martin Sheen to deliver my bad news.
He's definitely not on cameo, but yeah.
That's
that
fine, but that's who I want to deliver
maybe Charlie my Sheen might
nope.
be.
Nope.
Might be more closer.
I don't want that Sheen.
Yes. All right. Or Martin Sheen to come in and tell you something bad. Yeah.
I don't want him to come and tell me, but if I have bad news.
Sure.
Like, if I've got cancer or something, I want Martin Sheen to walk
maybe
into
this is a new thing. Yeah, doctors are going to hire cameos to...
I want Martin Sheen to walk into the
I'm going to put this phone down here, I'm going to press play, and I'm going to walk away. Patience.
Yeah. Yes. I just feel like he'd be compassionate and... Uh-huh. I feel like if you were there in person, like I feel like there'd be a moment for us to share in the spirituality of that space.
Sure.
Yeah.
Except for most cameos, it's going to be some D-list, C-list celebrities. So that's what you're looking with. It's like, you know, here I've got Pamela Anderson. She's got some bad news about your cancer scare here. Yes. She's got something to share
hard
with
pass.
You.
Yeah. Hard pass.
Katie, who is any celebrity out there you'd want to deliver bad news to you?
I don't know. Deliver bad news?
Sure.
I don't know.
You don't know?
Uh-uh.
Not one celebrity.
I don't know.
That's a great answer.
This is a
riveting podcast.
There's like celebrities that I'd like to just talk to. I mean, I don't know.
This is not a back and forth. They just give a one way message, you know. Reba Mac. Okay, Reba's a good one. You know,
Reba
I can see
would be a good one.
Maybe she'd sing it to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, Reba's probably not on cameo. I'm trying to think of, you know, someone in that genre that, you know, one hit wonder.
Didn't Reba have a daughter who's like not as good as Reba?
Yeah, maybe a Wilson Phillips. Maybe one of those.
I love Wilson Phillips.
Yeah. One of the Wilson Phillips girls could do it for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
They'd probably just sing hold on for one day.
Yeah.
Now we have to pay them for that.
$100. Yes. All right, let's move on to our real news of the day.
All right.
All right. Got? Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He's got a name that's a little tough. A little tough to pronounce. Mayor Pete, I'll just say that, invokes Matthew 25 in his latest campaign ad.
In South Carolina.
Well, yeah. This is the headline.
Oh, okay.
All right, I'll get to it. As a 2020...
But, like, we're not going to see this on our... TVs here,
probably
in the Texas area.
Yeah, well, I mean, our South Carolina listeners will be.
That's true.
I'm sure we have some.
We actually probably do.
There you go. Oh, you used to work in South Carolina, yeah. So mm-hmm. Some of your old crowd.
We got a shout out to my South Carolina peeps. Yes.
You can give them a cameo here. That's right. This is Pastor David. I'm number one on the charts and always in your hearts.
That's right. <It's>
Oh, all right, well, as the 2020 election heats up, Democratic presidential hopeful Mayor Pete, I'm just going to say, released a commercial earlier this week involving Matthew 25 to stir up potential voters in South Carolina. So the ad goes, and this is a quote from it, "In our White House, you won't have to shake your head and ask yourself, what happened to, I was hungry and you fed me. I was a stranger and you welcomed me." All right, so what do we think about this? Invoking Matthew 25 to, Matthew 25 is mostly a parable that mm-hmm. Jesus says, separating sheep and goats, and he says to the sheep, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was poor, you welcomed me. When I was in prison,
you visited me.
And says, like, whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. That's right. The parable.
And the goats didn't do those things.
Yes, the goats did not do those things, and they go to eternal punishment. The sheep did those things, and they go to eternal heaven. I don't know.
Life.
Eternal life.
Yeah, we'll have to look up the translation on that. Yeah.
We'll get back to you.
It's something.
Yeah. Eternal life.
They're separated. That's the point.
Yeah.
There's sheep and there's goats. And apparently goats are not good.
Yes.
I'm not a farmer, but that's what I learned from Jesus.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, this is one of you doing here for the campaign. What do you think about this appealing to religious voters?
I mean, I don't have a problem with appealing to a religious voter because I am a religious voter.
Yes.
So
right.
I think this is interesting. Someone from the Democratic Party trying to make this direct appeal clearly to a religious voter and trying to be a clear differentiation between themselves and between an existing appeal to religious voters. I think that that's a call that we haven't seen, at least I haven't seen in my lifetime from the Democratic Party. So it's an interesting move for him to be making, for sure.
Yeah, oftentimes, if one party is making a religious appeal, especially towards Christian voters, mm-hmm. would be the conservatives or the Republican side. The Democratic Party rarely engages in these things, not to say Democratic Party has absent of Christians.
Right.
In fact, almost every one of their candidates has been a self-professed Christian.
Yep.
Mayor Pete is a self-professed Christian, veteran, and is also gay. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is an interesting play from him as a candidate. You know, typically, obviously the relationship between the homosexual community and the Christian community has been complex at best, historically. So I think trying to bridge those worlds is ambitious. I will definitely say that.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, the Democratic Party is often looked at by religious folk in general, whether they would identify as conservative or Republican, just by people who are religious in general, the Democratic Party is often viewed as anti-religious or anti-Christian, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And maybe anti is too strong, but at best, Christianity is a side note and is not the fore. And so for him to make this play, making a direct appeal to the Christian scriptures, it is a unique stance to be taking in the Democratic. And maybe it's something that appeals to people who would have otherwise written off some of the Democrats. I don't know. I'm not a political strategist, but I'm sure that someone who was thought about why he should do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Has he seen a boost in numbers since?
So he has totally, he has risen in the ranks. He is currently fourth in the Democratic Party polling behind Joe Biden, who's Catholic, Elizabeth Warren, and I'm unaware of her religious affiliation, and Bernie Sanders, who's Jewish.
Okay.
So he would be number four there. So Protestant. Again, I can't speak for Elizabeth Warren's religious standing. And so South Carolina, my research here, is typically an area where it's dominated, especially on the Democratic side, by African-American voters. Mm-hmm. So this is an appeal towards an African-American crowd that has a lot of religious background. Typically, the most religious group in the United States are Black people or African-Americans. Mm-hmm. And so this is him making this appeal. But it's obviously, people are saying it's going to be a complex or interesting launch there. So this is a pastor, Joe Darby, from Nicholas Chapel in South Carolina. He said this, Black churchgoers tend to be very progressive when it comes to issues of advocacy, equality, and justice, but are often socially conservative on issues of sex. So I think this is an interesting way, an interesting try to bridge this gap. So, and that's probably true. I think most African-Americans would consider themselves part of the evangelical side of Christianity, which has, again, a complex history with marriage equality and with how they approach the homosexual community. Mm-hmm. And yet, Black voters typically vote for the liberal parties because of their advocacy, equality, and justice.
Sure.
So,
well, I think, if Mayor Pete is trying to make a political move here, right? I mean, that's obviously what he's trying to do. And so in that sense, you know, he's appealing to a sense of, hey, there are justice issues, if you want to think of it that way. Yeah. There are issues that Jesus calls us towards around caring for the poor, caring for the least of these. That would appeal to people who are concerned around advocacy and that sort of work. He's not stepping out there and saying, hey, I'm gay, so everybody should vote for me, right? Yeah, I mean, and so he's aware that there's a way to make this case for why he's a valuable candidate. Now, whether or not
it works,
that pans, whether or not it works, whether or not that pans out, I will say this. It feels to me like his faith and his work or his talk around it is genuine. And so I have no problem with him making that appeal because it feels authentic to who he is and to his faith experience. I have a serious problem with political candidates using religion for their own personal gain because it's convenient. But in every conversation that I've seen with Mayor Pete, you know, even before he was a political figure that was running for president, you know, I'd heard conversations just because he was out of South Bend, which is kind of close to Ohio, and so I'd heard some things with him. It just seems like faith is genuinely something that he takes seriously and wants to invoke in his life. And so, yeah, of course, if I'm a Christian and I'm, you know, living my life faithfully to that, then I'm going to make these invocations because that's a part of who I am.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So for you, as a potential voter for the 2020 election, I can't say maybe we will vote, maybe we won't. I don't know.
I'll vote.
We probably will.
It's part of my patriotic duty to participate in elections.
Is it important for you that the person you vote for shares your religious understanding of the world? So is it important for you to vote for a Christian in the White House?
That's a really good question. I've not been in a place where I've had to make that decision yet.
Yeah.
So I will have to do some thinking on that because I'm not sure that I know. I mean, I think offhand, there are pieces of my faith that I think are really important to engage in with the political realm. And so there are definitely aspects of it that I don't want people to be anti elements of my faith. But there are also really central elements of my faith that I think are shared across religious boundaries, right? I mean, so there are elements of how I think we should be operating towards the poor, towards the sick, towards our neighbor, towards etc. You know, I think that those are shared regardless of our religious boundary. And so, I don't know. I'd have to do some serious thought about that.
Yeah,
I agree. I haven't faced that yet in voting. I would like to say that yes, it's important for me to have a Christian in the White House. That is something that I do. I mean, I think that, you know, if you say you're a Christian, you live by that and you make choices in your life and even in your political dealings, that would be an underlying because that's who you are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
you know, biblically, there's plenty of evidence that God is working through leaders regardless of their religious affiliation,
that's
right?
That's very true.
You know, in the Old Testament, God makes it clear that God is working through leaders of Babylon and leaders of Persia to both punish and rescue Israel and those things. So I don't know that God needs the the President of the United States to be a Christian in order to
do the work in order to have
God's work carried out. But where are our values represented in that is a reasonable question.
Yeah, I think it's certainly complex, and as we live in a greater pluralistic society, it's going to be even more complex as we move forward.
Yeah.
You know, we've not had, to my knowledge, an openly atheistic presidential candidate from either major party or an openly Muslim or openly Jewish member of the faith to head a major party for election, but we could also
Bernie's come the closest, but he's not. Right. Yeah, he didn't.
But we can also acknowledge that not every American president has probably passed the litmus test of real Christianity.
Sure.
From even belief in Jesus as Son of God.
Right.
You know, so even there, you know,
I mean, there's even elements that many of the founding fathers would not have passed.
Sure, and I include them in that. You know, this isn't necessarily not necessarily modern history, but historic history as well.
Historic history,
yes.
Real history.
The real history. Yeah. The history, I know, because I learned about it in middle school. So
middle school history.
Yeah. But I do think, I do commend, you know, Mayor Pete here's ambition. Obviously, every political party is trying to string together a wide range of people that are not completely unified mm-hmm. on every front. I mean, here we have, like, African-American voters can align with the Democratic side on issues of advocacy, justice, equality, but more closely aligned to a Republican side on issues of sexuality and maybe even morality, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. They're mm-hmm. more closer there, especially with maybe our Latino population probably has a similar background.
Sure.
They're historically right. conservative Catholics, mm-hmm. and yet have that same desire for advocacy for justice yeah. that the Democratic side is putting mm-hmm. forward
yeah.
as what matters to them. So they're roping in kind of some religious voters while also roping in they have a greater population of atheist voters compared to the conservative side. So how does one person try to engage all of them simultaneously, we can say, is difficult.
Right.
And the Republican sides have their own issue. They're trying to rope in a yep, wide absolutely. Range right. of people as well. So that's difficult to say. How can we highlight the things that matter to everyone
right.
and bring them and try to bring them in?
Well, I think that's important to see that it's hard to say that any one candidate
sure.
is the candidate that a Christian should vote for.
Yeah.
Right? I think there are lots of candidates that someone who takes their faith seriously should say, I'm not going to support that candidate because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say that there's only one right candidate that God has, you know, that right. God wants Christians to vote for, or that God has ordained to have this. That is not, the presidency is not a position ordained by God. It yeah. has never been intended to be that. And so I do pray and hope that God continues to work through whoever has that position. But it's hard for me as a pastor, and it's hard for me just as a person of faith to say there's only one right candidate mm-hmm. to vote for.
Well, and I think too, like even watching debates and watching all of it, and it's going to become even more prevalent in the next
oh, yeah,
several
wait.
Months. But I wish there was a candidate that I could just like pick different parts of everybody and just sure. mash them
you
together.
You
want to
make a Frankenstein candidate.
One.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like sure. this makes sense, this makes sense, this makes sense, and this makes sense. Let's just smash all of that together.
Sure. Yeah.
That would be much easier for yeah. me. Yeah.
You get to be in charge of this and nothing yes. else. You get right. to be in charge of this and nothing
right.
else.
Yeah.
You
then that would just be great.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure most people on either side of the political spectrum kind of see those
yes.
things. And as they're going through, especially a primary season is kind of the most complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you're mm-hmm. weighing down, or you're slowly whittling down your options to
right.
finally have one or two, and then ultimately you go from there.
So let me ask you a question, because I grew up in Ohio, which is a major swing state
yes.
For presidential elections, and then I was in South Carolina for a while, which was being hotly contested in the last election while I was there.
Welcome to Texas.
Texas is pretty strongly red, but there's evidence that it's mm-hmm. moving to potentially have more contestation from
sure.
the Democratic base,
yes.
especially in an area like Houston or Austin or San Antonio, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the experience of going through like a primary? Like, do you get just inundated with stuff constantly down here, or am I going to be like wondering who's running for stuff because they're not even going to bother running ads?
You'll get inundated with ads.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
for sure.
Okay.
I mean they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But I do see Texas turning purple. It's very purple now.
Yeah, it is closer than it's been.
It is.
It's closer
than red.
Sorry,
purple.
I understand that blue and red make purple. I'm laughing because. Don't make purple was an expression that we used in youth group when you
oh.
were,
because yes.
boys were blue and girls were red, and so you weren't allowed to like
oh,
cross the boundary,
saying.
So
okay,
don't make
yeah.
purple.
Not what I'm referring to.
I know that's not what you're referring to, but that's why I was chuckling to myself.
Yeah, as more and more people move to cities
yeah,
for
sure.
economic purposes, mm-hmm. Cities typically go blue, countries typically go red. And by country,
rural,
the country rural mm-hmm. usually goes red. And it's kind of like ultimately what's going to probably decide the day is going to be the suburbs. This
sure.
in between
yep.
city and rural. What direction are...
Please continue to define suburbs for us, Patrick. I like this. This is great.
Okay. Where are they going to go is probably the big question
yeah.
for...
And I think we saw that in the 2018 election with Cruz and Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
And that it was just,
sure.
I mean, there
but,
were more, I mean, it was closer than I think it's ever been before.
Sure, but that was also a, I mean, it was a federal position, but it was a state-elected
right.
position. So obviously
right.
they're going to be
yes.
contesting it and advertising
right.
here.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how hotly
sure.
contested Texas is.
And maybe you'll have a better understanding of that, because I've only lived in Texas.
Yeah.
Katie's only lived in Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I mean,
I've not lived other places, so what
back.
I think is...
I'll let you know.
Might not be often.
I'll let you know if it's better or
okay.
worse. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I do like about this before I move on is I do appreciate one of the Democratic candidates saying, hey, Christian religious voters matter, especially to the Democratic
yep,
side.
Sure.
And that it's not a party that is not for Christians, that is mm-hmm. abandoning Christian principles or Christian ideals. And I do appreciate that mm-hmm. it's saying, like, hey, what Christians value matter to us. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that I would like to see that even a greater highlight, even by candidates that are not Christian or not practicing Christian, and say what Christians value matters to us because that's a part of the values of our country.
Right.
Even if it's not, you know, purely founded on Christian values, we understand, like, there's a lot of plurality that happened in the Founding Fathers, but how Christians see the world today influence how Americans see the world, and that matters.
Yep.
All right, let's continue to move on here. A new article here. Jesus came to proclaim good news to the poor, but now they're leaving church. All right, so this
Jesus
is from...
Jesus is leaving church?
No, the poor.
Oh, the poor, okay.
I mean, maybe in some churches. Fair enough.
Jesus has left the building.
Yes. There's a facet of this issue that should be particularly worrisome to Christians here. Many of the poorest Americans are abandoning church en masse. By stepping away from church communities, the people who are most financially strapped mm-hmm. also end up losing out on social networks and social capital, which can make their economic situation outlook even worse. So this is an article here that did some studies, and they said since the 70s, there was about a 5% difference between poor and rich on how they approached church, and everybody was kind of mostly Americans were identifying as Christians, mm-hmm. going to church once a month or every other month, and so they were seeing that. And there's a 5% difference between the highest 25% and the lowest 25% of wage earners in our country. The poorest were less likely to go to church than the rich at that time. But as that time has progressed from the 70s, that gap has widened.
Both gaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So one, less people are going to church.
In general,
and the poor are going to church less
than
the rich, so they're experiencing that decline at a greater rate. And so now there's over a 10% gap between the richest Americans and the poorest Americans. Sometimes you say like 5%, 10%. Does that even matter? But it is significant. Mm-hmm. And so that is a significant decline, especially because worldwide Christianity typically finds its home most amongst the poorest communities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so here in the West, saying the poor is kind of abandoning Christianity, this is a major red flag or a major question mark. Like, what does that mean for the state of the church today?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think there are a couple things that I've been thinking about that might play into this. I think one, churches have, rather than rooting themselves in a community and saying we're going to stay here regardless of who is around us, mm-hmm. Churches have taken up a standard of just continuing to move their building or move their space to wherever their people are going to be, mm-hmm. which also adds to the natural kind of segregation of churches, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, if we have a congregation that looks like this, we're going to keep moving to pockets that look like that rather than shifting a congregation to reflect the community that it's in. Mm-hmm. With that also tends to come money, right?
Yeah.
So you tend to move to where people are going to be financially able to support a congregation, and poorer communities might not have the income to support a pastor, might not have the income to support an infrastructure for a building, that sort of thing. So that's a real challenge. The other piece, I think, and this is a broader issue, but, you know, when we look at issues like the Sabbath, right? If we look at a biblical understanding of Sabbath, Sabbath was intended to be a place where no matter what the world was telling you, you had an opportunity to step out of work and to rely on God. Mm. And Sabbath in a modern context has really become a luxury of the middle class and upper classes who can afford to have a job, or who can afford or who have jobs that afford them the opportunity to have a day off.
Yeah.
And a lot of the poorest of the poor are working multiple jobs, are working jobs on weekends, maybe they're just not going to church, but it might also be that they're not going to church because they're forced to be, you know,
in the workforce.
Yeah, at Walmart mm-hmm. or at the restaurant that you're going to after mm-hmm. church or whatever, so that they can be putting food on their family. So, you know, not only then have we set up a system where they're not able to go to church, but we're also really denying them the opportunity for a very biblical understanding of rest mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. an opportunity to Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something for us to consider too, is how does that impact itself,
mm-hmm.
or how does that impact play out?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. I think both those are very good points, very good insights, Pastor David.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes. And okay, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say on another thing to add to that would be what I'm wondering. When you're in a church family, we try very hard to build these connections mm-hmm. between people and to build relationships so mm-hmm. that they feel part of a community and part of a group. I don't know specifically what exactly is happening in every area with every church.
Sure.
But my question is, are churches losing that connection building piece?
Sure.
So are there connections being made across congregations, regardless of income and regardless of mm-hmm. whatever? Are we facilitating those? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, American Christianity has historically, churches have been divided along racial lines, and mm-hmm. now potentially we're also going to be divided along economic lines.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and as Pastor David mentioned, it's going to be harder for economically poor area to support a mm-hmm. full-time minister, or to mm-hmm. support mm-hmm. a building, or to support ministries that go back towards itself. It's much, much more mm-hmm. difficult. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it a greater, you know, greater difficulty for opportunities for the poor to come to church.
Yeah.
One of the things they're also saying is it's not just a gap in church attendance, but it's also a gap in kind of involvement.
Yeah.
The growing social gap between the rich and poor extends beyond church attendance, as Americans in the lowest income bracket report being increasingly isolated from their own communities overall. Mm-hmm. So this is not just a church issue, it's kind of a communal issue that people who are poorer are typically more isolated, more lonely, mm-hmm. more alone, more often than the middle class or the upper class.
Right.
And so, and one of the things that I'm also going to say here in this study, people who are less social, who are leading less social lives, are more likely to never attend a worship service. Hmm. So it's not like church is filling that gap of I feel isolated, I feel lonely. Church takes that gap. It's I feel isolated, I feel lonely,
and
church becomes
anything.
Less likely mm-hmm. yeah. to come to.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. One of the things that we worked on when I was in Columbus, I was at First English Lutheran Church in Columbus, and one of the things that was happening there, this is a congregation in the kind of heart of the inner city of Columbus, and they saw this very thing playing out, and this was, you know, 8 years ago that was happening, but they saw this playing out where the community was disconnected from itself, and so they started hosting a meal,
yeah.
and you might say to yourself, well, there are tons of places where people could go to get a meal. Yeah, there absolutely were, you know, lots of programs that were doing feeding programs where you come and you eat something and you mm-hmm. leave. But this was actually intended not just to be a meal, but to be a community gathering space. That you come here, not you don't just come to get fed, but you come to sit and talk with your neighbors. And it was an opportunity for the congregation to connect with the community. It was an opportunity for the community to connect with itself.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that grew all sorts of other opportunities. They developed an art show for the community out of it. They developed other ways that the community was kind of beginning to realize some of its own assets and things that it could do for itself. So I think that's a central piece where we have an opportunity. And I think the church is uniquely positioned to say, we know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we take it seriously and invest
right.
in it. Because what it took was churches from the suburbs, churches from wealthier parts of Columbus, investing in the ministry of this poorer mm-hmm. congregation, saying, we're going to help fund this, we're going to help bring volunteers to be here, to be a part of this, because this is valuable to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have this connection in our place, we want to come and help build this connection and make these connections here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a tough sell.
Yeah, I think that is... Obviously, most of the churches, whenever they want to give in the offering plate, sometimes it becomes like, well, how is this affecting the ministries to, the,
sure.
to my family, the people I care
right.
about in my own community?
Right.
How does our offering go back to us, in a
mm-hmm.
sense? And now it maybe comes a time to say, how can my offering be truly an offering to
yep.
go to
right.
someone else? How can this do a ministry to kids I've never seen, to old people I'll never meet, to members of another congregation that I will meet in heaven one day and not have an interaction with here
yep.
on earth? Or it comes into how can we be very intentional about meeting the needs around us and not just finding people who either look like us or in the same economic background as us or work in the same building as me, but how can I be very intentional to say how can we make friends with people that are different?
Right.
And that's difficult.
Yep.
I mean, we can all admit that's a very yep. hard thing to do. It's hard to make friends with not only somebody who potentially has a different race, but also hard to make friends with somebody who doesn't work in your own building,
yeah.
you know, has a different economic class.
Yep.
That can be a very difficult job to do.
Yeah.
And so if you typically think, like, well, we're going to invite our friends to church, well, you invite the people who typically look
mm-hmm.
like you.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's how can we be very intentional to find people who do not look like me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's harder. All right. Well, I think that wraps us up this week. I do have a point of order, actually, from last week.
Point of order.
Yes. Oh, there you go. A new thing. I made a mistake, and I want to correct it, because it's not fair to Salvation Army. That's something I said.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So I mentioned an article or a thing that happened in the past of a trans woman who froze to death outside of a Salvation Army
yeah.
thing, and I did some more research thanks to one of our listeners, and there's no evidence that this woman went to Salvation Army and was rejected. So okay. It happened. It's obviously a tragedy, but
she was outside of Salvation Army.
It is unfair. This is unfair to blame Salvation Army
Fair
for.
Enough.
Right. And I think based on
our apologies,
our discussion last week, if you are dissatisfied or displeased with Salvation Army, I think that's fair.
Right.
And if you love Salvation Army, I think that's fair. They do a lot of good things in our world.
Sure.
But this is not a reason to dislike Salvation Army.
Right.
So, and this is not absolve Salvation Army for any other wrongdoing, but this is not fair to them. So I wanted to make sure that was clear. So don't repeat that around because it's not completely accurate.
Yep. Right. Sincerest of apologies from all of us at Beyond Sunday. Yeah.
And I also have a recommendation.
Da-da-da.
Yes. We are starting a new video series here at Lord of Life.
Oh yeah!
Why do Lutherans do what we do? And all three of us are involved in this video series. So I am interviewing kids from Katie's program that she brings me. Kids. That sounds weird. We'll start over.
Keep going. Keep digging that hole.
Yeah. So during our Sunday school classes, she will ask our kids, and I interview them about things within the church. So this first episode, we're talking all about Advent, all about kind of this upcoming Christmassy season or the pre-Christmas, what Advent means, things like that. What is an Advent wreath? And then Pastor David and I sit down and he gives us kind of the real answers.
Right.
And it's pretty funny. And I think our listeners would enjoy seeing some cute kids give some very hilarious answers to what is an Advent wreath. They have no idea. Or at least the kids we interviewed had no idea.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
So you can find that on either our church social media, so Lord of Life's Facebook pages, or my personal YouTube channel, Patrick Nazaroff, on YouTube. So.
Yeah, and we'll link to some of those things on the Beyond Sunday Facebook page as well. We can do that.
And so we will be producing this once a month for a year, all about kind of these weird things that happen in the Lutheran church that maybe some people are just like, I'm not sure why we do that.
Yeah.
And you could be a lifelong Lutheran and still be like, I don't really know why the pastor wears a robe.
Yeah.
And so
it's possible that the pastor even had to do some research to find an answer as to why some of these things happen.
Yes. So I think that'll be fun and exciting. Yeah. So once a month, one of those videos will come out. Where can you find us?
Hey, if you like what you heard, you can find us wherever elegant and beautiful podcasts are available.
God-ordained podcasts.
Sure, yeah, those too. All of them are available on your favorite podcast provider. Be sure to subscribe, share it out to whoever it is that you might want to listen to this message so that we have an opportunity to keep taking our faith beyond Sunday. You can find us on Facebook at Beyond Sunday, Beyond Sunday Podcast, and of course on the web, interwebs, at www.beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Definitely all our listeners need to hire a Cameo, send it out to your friends to promote Beyond Sunday.
Do that.
Yeah, get Coolio to go to your friends and tell them about Beyond Sunday.
I think this is our new marketing strategy. We hire Cameos just to do like Beyond Sunday podcast shout-outs.
Sure, I could see a church doing that. You know, reaching the community. You want to get some D-list celebrity from the 90s.
Yeah.
Not Fresh Prince. He's too popular. Will Smith. Maybe Jazzy Jeff. You know?
Sure.
He'd be a good one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. Maybe Uncle Joey from Full House. Well, he's definitely a popular, I'm sure.
Right? Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I think these are good ones, yeah.
Who's the middle child from Full House? She'd probably be on
Stephanie?
Yes. Yeah, Stephanie.
See, I couldn't even remember her name. The middle child.
Allison Sweeney.
The forgotten
probably
middle.
All of them are probably on there. Maybe not the...
Olsen twins, had a second career...
Fashionistas, yeah.
Candace Cameron.
Are they still... They didn't, like, go off the deep end?
I think they did a little bit. But, you know... they're child actors. It's kind of an inevitability.
Yeah, it's a tragic story.
Yes. All right, thanks for listening.
That's why I was never a child actor.
That's why.
that's what's
happening. It's all very clear.
The talent was there. It was the, I
had the opportunity and I said, no, thank you. I don't want to go down that road.
Sure. They were knocking at your door.
I want to give my life to God.
Yes. Do you want to be in the Home Alone remake and you're like, oh, I'm good.
I was the original Macaulay Culkin. Yes.
Another fall from grace child actor. You know,
Macaulay Culkin?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Happens.
Child actors and pastor's kids. That's
that's true.
rough road.
All right, well, thanks for listening. We'll see you back next week.